Back another episode of the podcast, and Phil, you're muted.
Not anymore.
What episode is it now? I'm trying to remember.
Number 47.
47. It's been a ride, that's for sure. But Phil, I mean, why not introduce our guest?
Man,
let's get started.
Yeah, let's get it started here. I know we're jumping in a little bit out the eight ball here, but it's gonna be totally worth it, you know. We're so blessed to live out here on the West Coast, and, you know, me and Vincent live in Arizona, and we've seen tonight's guest so many times at the events over the years. You know, the term legend gets thrown around a lot. This is 100% a legend in Monster Trucks. He has the Hall of Fame accolades to prove it. Jack of all trades. I mean, that's literally his name. Let's bring him on. Play the intro video first, and here he is, our guest tonight, Jack Coburna.
Jack, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing real good. It's a pleasure to be on.
Always a pleasure to have you and chit-chat with you, Jack. I know you're jack of all trades and can't wait to tell your story here tonight.
Okay, well, see what we can get done tonight and see what we can lie about or not lie about.
Don't worry. Right. Only on the internet.
Well, like Phil said, let's get this thing started. Jack, how did you get your start in motorsports?
Well, you know, first thing, I always liked four-wheeling, going out in the desert in Arizona. You know, growing up in Arizona, there's always good places to go four-wheeling and do stuff. Then I found out that they were doing mud bogs. So I said, heck, I can drive in the mud. So I started out as a mud bogger and stuff, and it just grew from there. You know, I went with the National Mud Bog Association years ago in mudding, and then I found out that they'd actually wanted people to climb over cars. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. Let's try that, you know. And it just escalated from there. We're just hanging in there and doing our thing all the time, trying to see what's new, trying to go bigger, badder, and not mess everything up. But you know, you got those things. But that's how it all started: pulling cars apart on fire, just doing simple little climb over the cars at first. You know, we just climbed over the cars, didn't do any. If you got 3 inches of air, you were thinking, oh my God, look at all the air I got. You know, it was crazy back then. You never thought about just climbing over cars. But we moved on to doing some wheelies on the side of the cars, and then we started racing over the cars, and then all of a sudden they decided the freestyle stuff. So that's kind of how it got started and where it went.
I always got to get your start somewhere. Now, why did you even choose mud racing to begin with?
Well, you know, we always used to go down the river and drive around and drive through the river there in the, you know, Arizona and stuff. And at it, you know, it's just a challenge. You know, it's like, well, you're going to go out there and put a purse up and see if we can get Fergus in the mud. Heck yeah, let's do it. Hey, have fun, try to make some money. And it was a family outing, is what it was. And it was something else to do besides getting in trouble. So, you know, that's what started it.
And so on and so forth going down the road. I know everybody's slowly coming in here tonight. Make sure you guys like and share this video. Share it all across social media as we're just getting started with Jack Coburna. So you're mud racing, and you know your mud racer is the Beast. What made you want to build the Beast and name it the Beast? How did that all come together?
Well, you know, at first I started out mud racing. I had a little international scout that I put some bigger tires on it, some bigger running gear. And then, you know, at that time they started out with these trucks with these tractor tires and stuff, Super Pros. And, they'd go out there and they were going through the mud and this and that, you know, and thinking nothing could beat them and stuff like that. And, you know, the ego got carried away and it's like, you know what, guys, I can build something and beat you guys. So I figured I could find something that was just completely off the wall, something different, and just find something that was a real beast. And I built this thing. I had the first show I showed up with it. I literally had four different tires on it, had headers on one side of the motor. It was kind of like a joke at first, just to prove these guys wrong that, you know, they wasn't as big as they thought they was going through the mud with their big tires and stuff. And, went out there and really it worked out pretty good the first show. It actually, I buried the truck so deep that they had to stop the show because they couldn't pull me out.
It's crazy, crazy times. You know, what made you even want to name it the Beast?
Well, it was a beast. You know, I don't know where it came from exactly, but I don't know if somebody just said, you know, what's that beast you're building or what is this and that. But it just kind of fit that international travel all body because it was so big and so long. And, you know, it had full three seats in it, front to back. You know, we used to give rides in the darn thing clear back then around the mud bog pits and stuff. All the kids grew up in that truck out there in Arizona. So we used to have a blast, and it was just a beast. It just come along, and it worked.
And it worked. It did. Now, as you're moving on there with the Beast, what are the types of events? What does a typical weekend look like with the Beast?
Well, you know, you worked all week on it, just like we do now with the monster truck. You worked all week after work, you late night, keeping things honed. You know, after you got it cleaned up from the weekend before, that took you 2 or 3 days of getting all the mud off it from the weekend before. But there was always something to do, always something to check. And, you know, load it up and head for the next show. Sometimes it was just down the road. Sometimes it was clear across the state, sometimes in another state. So, you know, it really was no difference than what we're doing right now. You know, the scale is a little different. It's a lot more expensive now, but, you know, it just went on and on and on. And we just had a blast doing it. Couldn't, thought of anything better to do on weekends at that time.
Keeping yourself busy on the weekends. And, you know, as you're moving on there, you win a championship with the association. You know, how does that even entail where you become a champion driving the Beast?
Well, you know, there is a point system in everything, it seems like. And back then, you know, with the National Mud Bog Association, you know, there was always a point system of where you placed every weekend. You know, we raced almost every other weekend, and between California, New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, and sometimes we went up into Utah with the National Mud Bog Association. But we raced everywhere. You know, we did a lot of shows. Every place that would let us make mud, we did it. You know, I worked for, you know, Mike Brady and the Black Knight, you know, on his monster truck. At first, you know, with the National Mud Bog Association, keeping it going. So, you know, it really worked out. It turned out to be a career clear back then.
So you mentioned Mike Brady and the Black Knight. I know being out here in Arizona, I hear the folk tales of the Black Knight running at the fairgrounds and all over the West Coast. It was really a force you reckon with. What can you tell me about Mike Brady and what made Black Knight just this force to be reckoned with on the track.
Well, Mike Brady was a promoter. He wasn't afraid to promote anything. The guy would just decide to do something and throw it together and just go out there and do it. He wasn't afraid to lose. He wasn't afraid to have a show go bad. You know, he was just relentless. And, you know, he built that truck and it did all right and stuff. You know, then I come on board because I was racing with him every weekend and I could see, you know, it had this and had that problem. So I just started wrenching on it, helping him out with it. And it ran a little bit smaller tires, which made it a lot easier through the mud because it was a fast truck through the mud. It was light. It was fast. And it just, he was a, I don't know what you call him, you know, but like I said, he was a good promoter. He did, we'd just look at a map, find a town and find a fairgrounds and we'd do a mud bog. And he'd bring everybody that possibly could make it from Arizona. Almost everybody in Arizona traveled everywhere with him. So the guy really had a start of this whole thing at this monster truck mud bog world that got going.
So how did you end up building the Savage Beast?
The Savage Beast was, I just decided to do something a little different. You know, I changed out a lot of the suspension, put the motor in the back, did a lot of different crazy things with it. And I decided it needed a new name because there was other trucks out there sporting the same name, you know. So I decided, well, you know what? I'm just going to try to make it bigger, badder, and meaner. And I just went ahead and threw the Savage on front of it just to do something different.
So mechanically, what's the biggest difference between the Beast and Savage Beast?
The difference was that the Beast had airbag suspension. It only had, 12 inches of suspension on it because of the airbags. The motor was in the front. When I decided to make it the Savage Beast, the motor was in the back. It had gas shocks on it. It had a lot more suspension on it. And it actually had a lot more motor than it did ever before. So it was just basically, it was an upgrade.
And you keep on upgrading. I know the biggest upgrade eventually, you get into the monster truck game. How do you get there?
Well, you know, at one time we were running dual tires on the truck. And the running gear was not made to put a lot of weight on it. You know, it was made for the skinny, tall tractor tires. It didn't have the strength to run the Terra tires. But it was time to change. So we went back to the shop, decided, well, it's time for the 5 tons, get rid of the lighter stuff, time to start just doing the car crushes. And we figured if nothing else, we could always throw track tires back on it and race if we wanted to. But at that point, it just grew. The start of the monster truck stuff was growing so fast and so quick that it just never went back in the mud. The only time I ever went in the mud was when I was doing like a freestyle thing and there was a mud bog there. I'd always end up in the mud one way or another, slide in the mud, or I just have to hit the pit. But when it got turned into a monster truck, it was supposed to be a monster truck.
So what was the thought process behind building Cyborg?
Cyborg was a long thought out journey that I decided that any kind of dirt sport had different classes. And I really thought that we could make the monster truck world split up into two different classes, two different stages of monster trucks. So I built a Cyborg two-wheel drive with the independent front suspension, basically because no one said I could do it, but I had to show them wrong. And I thought that we could make it grow and give people a different chance to get into the sport, to be racing, you know, a two-wheel drive class and a four-wheel drive class, just like off-road. There's two-wheel drive, there's four-wheel drive off-road race trucks. So I thought, it ain't no cheaper. There was no advantage over the cost. It actually had more metal in it in the front end to keep it in there than a regular truck, because everything had to work different and it had to just plow into cars, you know, without no power. So it was just an idea that I thought we could make work, but then we just found out that a monster truck's a monster truck and they really didn't care So I had to go out there and just run it to death to prove that this two-wheel drive truck would keep up with anything I wanted to race against and do just exactly what a four-wheel drive truck did.
So what did your competition think about you running a two-wheel drive truck?
Well, first they thought, oh, that thing will never work. You know, it's, what kind of a crazy guy is this coming out here with a two-wheel drive truck? You know, it was kind of funny because every time I showed up to a show and they'd do a safety check on the truck, you know, the techs would go, oh, my God, this guy don't even have a front drive shaft. You know, it's like, well, no, it don't have a front drive shaft. You know, it don't even have a front end. It's two-wheel drive. And they just thought I was out of my mind, crazy. So, but, you know, the truck proved itself. People got respect for the truck, and it ran a lot of shows.
I think another good question, why two-wheel drive?
Well, like I said, I really wanted to try to make the sport grow with the two different classes. I thought there was room for a two-wheel drive monster truck class and a four-wheel drive monster truck class. And, you know, and split all this up to make – I didn't think that the monster trucks – I never thought they would go where they are today. I thought it would get to a point and it would kind of just level out. And it's like any other race class. Oh, well, it's just another monster truck show. So I figured, you know what, let's do something different. Let's try something different. And – as a gimmick, it worked as good as a gimmick, I guess. I mean, but I just had an idea and I thought I could make it grow. Then I found out that they didn't care if it was two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, you know, in the monster truck world of people putting on shows.
Yeah, and then that's always an interesting characteristic. And, you know, that's always been a lot one of your defining traits in your truck. Now, obviously, people know the difference between a two-wheel drive and a four-wheel drive, but maybe from the driver's seat, you know, what's the biggest difference, you know, inside the truck? Is there any that major difference?
The difference is how you hit the cars. Now, the four-wheel drive truck, you come up to the cars and you gag into the throttle and you get the front end to pull you up over the cars. The two-wheel drive truck, I literally had to time it and bump the cars like at freestyle. I'd have to get the front end to bump into them and start up, and then I could jump into the throttle, power up, and go over the stuff. Racing part, it really didn't make any difference because I had some pretty good cleat tires in the back, and it would train us, you know, off the start line all the time because it just put all the power to the back end. So I was actually, you know, as far as power to ground ratio, I was putting more power to ground if I could get traction. But there wasn't nothing different, you know, in donuts and stuff. It worked different. Wheelies were different, you know. Just you had to learn how to drive it. That was the biggest thing. You know, I had other people get in there and try to drive it and just driving across the parking lot, and they'd be wiggling and wobbling because the steering and stuff on the front, I had it so fast that they couldn't even keep it straight because they were hanging on too tight. You needed to just relax and drive the truck and let it do what it did.
And you choose the name Cyborg, and you have this distinct red body on it. What was the design process on that?
Well, it was kind of like half truck and half me. You know, I mean, I poured my heart and soul into that truck. That was part of me. And, you know, it's like, you know, the Star Trek thing, the Cyborg thing. It's a half this, half that, half machine, half person. You know, and it just kind of had to be one with that truck. You couldn't just jump in there and just drive it. You had to know the truck. You had to feel the truck because it was so different to do. You had to do a lot more thinking in that truck. So it kind of fit that half man, half beast, half truck, half whatever. So it just kind of fit for the thing.
And guys, make sure if you're tuning in right now, make sure you like and share this video. Share it all across social media. As we continue on with the Hall of Famer, Jack Coburna, the man beast or cyborg or man with so many different nicknames behind the wheel. So you're driving Cyborg. You're at these monster truck events. Is there a lot of growing pains from doing the mud bogging and now you're in full-scale monster truck?
Well, not really, because at that time, you know, monster trucks, when I started doing the monster trucks, you were still just doing wheelies over at the side of the cars or in the back of the cars, driving over cars. It was all about crushing cars. It wasn't about flying over them and, you know, and doing stoppies or two wheelies or whatever, backflips. It wasn't about that kind of stuff back then. It was a monster truck crushed cars. And you wasn't about to fly over the cars. You know, people wanted to see cars get destroyed. They wanted to see their car that they drove every day sitting out there, the same kind of car that they had, and see it get crushed because they were mad at it or something that day. But it wasn't that hard of a learning curve to go out there at that time.
Now, of course, you're a master fabricator, I'd like to call it. You always know your way around the tools. That had to have been such a huge part on you being able to create your own pieces, really put to more from paper to physically have your own truck with your own, you know, working hands on it. Would that be correct?
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, that's kind of funny because everybody asked me, well, how did you build this? Or where did you get the drawings and this and that? And, you know, the fact is that I never had any drawings. I could see it in my head what I wanted it to do and wanted it to be. And I've just been fortunate enough from all the things I've built over the years before I started racing in off-road trucks and vehicles and hot rods, you know, being in high school, building, you know, a hot rod or something to be different. I just, for some reason, it just works in my head. And I create these things and I have no idea, you know, what it's going to look like when I get done. But to me, it makes sense and it works.
So I got to wonder, how many monster trucks have you built?
Well, I built, I have built 8 of my own, between monster trucks and ride trucks. I have built several trucks for other people. I just got done with a couple ride trucks here last couple years. I rebuilt, you know, several trucks. For a guy that was up in Oregon, you know, the original Nasty Habits and Unnamed Untamed, you know, I rebuilt those trucks. Rocky Mountain Thunder, I rebuilt. I helped Mike Welch up there with his truck. We built that little tank together. I helped him build that tank. God, I don't know, you know. I never have really kept track how many trucks that I've actually built. Or that I've helped build.
So can you tell us about some of the ride trucks you've built?
Well, my first ride truck was a 56 Ford school bus. And I ran it for about 3-4 years. And then guy offered me too much money for it. And it's like, okay, so I sold it. Then I built another school bus, the Surf Monster there. That it was a monster bus at first. And then we changed it over. We were trying to... a different scheme on it, so we changed it over to the Surf Monster, and we run it for a long time. And then it got to where I was doing shows over and over and over again with the same truck, so we retired that truck. Then we built a truck called Dumpy, and we ran it for another 5-10 years, whatever it was, you know, did the finals with it. You know, the Surf Monster stuff was at the first world finals, the second world finals they ever did in Vegas. You know, we did a lot of shows. We took Dumpy to Vegas and did a lot of shows with it. And then here about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, a guy showed up at a show. He wanted me to build him a ride truck. And I was doing a show in Kansas, and we had Dumpy there. And by the time it ended up, he ended up buying Dumpy from me. So it just like he just kept offering me more and more money until I finally decided, well, you know, I can build another truck. So I figured, well, I sold him that truck. That would be the end of him, you know. And about 3 weeks later, this fire truck shows up at the shop. And it's like, he still wants me to build another one. So we ended up building him another truck, the fire truck. And since then, he's sold Dumpy. I understand it. It went overseas or somewhere. I haven't seen it for quite a while. But I don't know who he sold it to. But it's running around out there somewhere. My original ride truck, the 56 Ford school bus. It was over in Vegas for a long time. I haven't seen it for a while. But, you know, we built a couple different Well, we built two fire trucks so far, and we rebuilt the one for Steve Kershaw that had the jet motor in the back. We took it off the street tires and put monster truck stuff underneath it about 5 years ago. So it's been a great career so far. We've done a lot of stuff for a lot of people. It made a lot of neat stuff.
So how did you get the opportunity to build and drive Gravedigger number 4?
Well, way back when we were, excuse me, when we were racing for Zizix Motorsports in out of California with Dave Matthews, greatest guy that ever was as far as the promoter, as far as I'm concerned. I miss him very much. And he hired up Dennis and, you know, John Moore and Carolina Kreischer and a couple other ones to come out there to California and start racing. So I got to know Dennis pretty good from racing and stuff and working on his truck, putting that thing back together between shows because it always needed something. And so it came down to where he was growing and growing, and he had built his second Gravedigger truck with the gas shocks and stuff on it, his new version of it from the old Ford grandma truck. And then the third one came along, and then he was fixing to get so busy that he needed another truck. Well, my truck, the Beast, we went over to Japan, and we ended up winning that event in Japan. I can't remember what it was, right before the Gulf War started, because the next year I was supposed to go over to take the Beast back to Japan and Hong Kong and Manila and do a bunch of shows for SRO at that time. And the Gulf War started, so they locked my truck up at the port, so I had nothing to do. So Dennis called and said, "Hey, I need another truck." He says, "I've got shows booked with USA Motorsports. I'm doing the other stuff. He said, I got to get another truck built. So what do you think? Are you interested in doing this truck?" So I said, "Yeah, you know, what am I going to do? I'm sitting around. My truck's locked up. I can't get it out of the ports because of the war. It's only military stuff going in and out there in California." So I went to Kildevil Hills the day after Thanksgiving that year and started on this truck. We built it from the old Coors Light Silver Bullet truck that he got. And I went home for Christmas. I flew home Christmas Eve, and all we had to do left was put the body on it. So it was a very fast and hard build, a lot of hours over there. And then, you know, he says, "I ain't got nobody to drive this truck." I said, "Well, I ain't got nothing to do." So I went ahead and started campaigning that truck. I took it for 16 weeks that year, all the USA shows, motorsport shows. So we ended up running that truck for 16 weeks straight that year. And it got to the point where it was just my truck was finally getting released. And I didn't have a problem, you know, driving his truck or anything like that, but it wasn't my truck. It was Dennis's truck. And I just really wasn't a hired driver. It's kind of like my own thing. I've always just wanted to, if there was a problem, it was my problem. So I would take care of it, do it. I'd have to worry about answering to nobody. So it was a great opportunity. Me and Dennis are great friends. We don't talk that much. I seen him last year at some shows with this kid. They brought the King Sling out, did some shows. And it was like the good old days. It's like we never quit talking. You know, we just run into each other every 4 or 5 years. We get, you know, hacking it up and just having a good old time. He's a great guy. He's been through a lot. I don't know. You know, I guess he's out doing his thing now for himself finally. And best wishes for him, you know. I just can't wait to see him again.
All roads bring us all back to monster trucks, and it's incredible the people you get to meet. And, you know, Dennis Anderson has become such an icon himself. And, you know, anytime anyone drives Gravedigger, that's always a certain pedestal that you got to have to sit on and hold yourself accountable for. So Was there any pressure for you to drive Gravedigger or a certain expectation you're at these events?
I never thought about any pressure. I literally drove it. I built the truck. I knew what it would do. I didn't worry about winning or losing. I just went out there and just mashed the throttle. You know, it had a thing that it had to do. I was paid to be out there to compete. So, you know, I did my job. You know, I ran the truck hard. I didn't destroy it. The truck was a good truck. And at that time, there really wasn't no freestyle at that time. There was wheelies and racing. Freestyle was just getting started, where we didn't go out there and do a bunch of crazy things. It was just a couple hits, three or four hits or something like that. No big deal. So it was an easy thing to do. The truck worked good for an old leaf spring truck. It was actually the only leaf spring truck that I've ever drove with leaf springs. I've always had different suspension. I've always had airbag suspensions or light suspension. So, I mean, the truck, it really worked good. It only put me in the emergency room one time. But other than that, it was a great truck. And wherever it is now, you know, someone's got to be having fun with it. I think that's the only chassis that Dennis has ever sold that was out of his fleet at that time. And, you know, I got out of it, and it went to Australia for a while and did a bunch of shows. But it's something that I've always been proud of, something that I'll never forget, you know, and I have a real good friend because of it.
You got that right. You never know where monster trucks will take you and great opportunities. If anybody has any questions for Jack, leave them in the comments here. I see Gary Schott was here in the comments earlier. Miles Parker is here. So, yeah, Gary Schott, I remember running with Jack in the beginning in the good old days. One of my favorite guys out there. Do you have a good Gary Schott story, remembrance of Gary?
Yeah, back in the day? There's nothing but good stories about Gary Schott. He's one of the greatest guys. I don't understand why he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, because this guy has been there from the beginning. He has done his deed. He's done his dues. He's the first truck to ever have a gas shock situation that he did himself. Nobody else has gas shocks. This guy was ahead of his time on suspensions. You know, he has built some incredible trucks. He's one of my fondest friends, you know, that's from the East Coast or the West Coast. And God, I just, you know, it's another one of them guys that you could just see and just pick up from where you left off. I don't have any, you know, exact stories, you know. Well, there, you know, was one where he came over to Arizona. He was going to live in Arizona for a while. He needed a place to stay. So I said, well, just come over and stay in my backyard, you know, just park your hauler stuff in the backyard, stay at the house. Well, the problem with that was I was going through a divorce. So he was living in my backyard at my ex-wife's house, and I was living at my shop. So he got a good education that year.
Well, we'll take what we can get here, folks. Yeah.
He had a place to live. You know, he didn't ask me where, but I said, just park there and go in the backyard. You know, I said, you know, it was just one of those things, you know. It's like, I don't know if he's ever forgiven me for it, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
He says, thanks, Jack.
Don't worry. We've had Gary on here before, too, so I'm sure he's got you back prior. So, you know, you're also very synonymous with another notable truck on your team, and that's Tough Enough. How did you come about getting Tough Enough?
Well, Tough Enough originally belonged to Pablo Cruz there in Arizona. We raced together in the mud bogs originally. They, you know, we helped him put the 5 tons of stuff underneath it, and he started campaigning it, you know, the Monster Truck Series with SRO. And he just kind of outgrew the truck. It just didn't quite fit him for, you know, you're either going to be in it for a long time or you're not. And he was just, you know, he loved the sport and everything, but it just didn't fit his idea of what was going to be, I think. So the truck sat for several years just in his backyard. And I got talking to him, this and that, and I ended up trading him out of it. went and picked it up. I thought, you know, this is great. We'll have a two truck team, you know, do something different. And actually, I got it, you know, for my wife Rocky to drive. She drove it for a year before I built her the new Tough Enough. And then we ended up selling it to Charlie Crosley, and he ran it all over the place for years. And I guess that truck ended up with Mike Welch. The way I understand it, he ended up with that chassis. But that's how it all kind of started with that truck. And it just grew from there. You know, she drove it for a year. And then I had my son Sterling. He drove it for a while. We had several drivers in that truck, you know. We just kind of kept it going and kept it with the fleet. You know, I had Brian Christensen. He drove it. Has the Beach Bum now. Clint Watson drove it. He's driving the Barefoot truck right now. Billy Haynes out of Colorado's drove it. Michael DeFreem out of New Orleans drove that truck. I've had a lot of people. I have my own brother, Rick. He's drove it the last time he drove it. He drove a couple of my other trucks when I needed him to drive. So it's been a good old truck, but I just decided to take it over myself and just go back to one truck and just campaign one truck. And life's a lot easier with one. The bills don't get paid as easy with one, but you know what? It just works good. I'm one guy in one truck.
You've always been a one-man band, but you've always had good people around you when the opportunity arises. And I know another one of those guys was Todd Bone, otherwise known as T-Bone. Where did you find old T-Bone at? And I remember he was quite the character on the road.
T-Bone was a good friend of my son's. He was working for a tow truck company here in Albuquerque at the time. We came over here. We were living in Texas at the time. We came over here to do Albuquerque at the state fair. We come over to do a monster truck show, and we were doing a rollover contest with cars. So we had built like six rollover cars to do this competition. And I think I had every tow truck driver in New Mexico in one of the cars. And Todd happened to be there, and he wanted to do it. So we had one car. We ended up switching out drivers with it. And I really kind of felt sorry for him because the seat belts and stuff came apart in the car, and the seat broke. So we got a ratchet strap. We tied him in the car, and he took off. Went out. He ended up winning the event, you know, strapped in with a ratchet strap. So I guess, you know, from then on, he was a real good friend of mine. I could call him up anytime I needed him. He would show up at the house or at the shop. And he lived, you know, 40, 50 miles from here. So it worked out pretty good because he would show up to work and he would just stay the night so we could work 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you know, so I didn't have to stop work and just like normal working hours. Todd was a great guy. I miss him very much. It was a big loss of Jack Caverna Racing when he passed away. And I'll never forget him. You know, he was a good friend. He was a good guy to call up at the nick of a moment and say, "Hey, dude, I need your help," and he'd be here. He was a great guy.
It's a good hand. He's definitely missed. I know that's why I brought him up. He was always a character. But I see a lot of people talking about a lot of the different bodies and paint schemes that your trucks have ran over the years, and I know we'll pinpoint on a lot of them. What were some of the design processes like? Did you have a creative hand in that? Because I picture like the turquoise Tough Enough and a lot of those later ones with the sponsorships all on them. You know, how'd you create all these designs?
Well, the sponsorship stuff, they pretty well told me what they wanted on it, and we went with that. We had our own little kick with it too that we, you know, we put into it. You know, you talk about the turquoise Tough Enough. That was like a one-time show. We went to Tucumcari and we had a sponsor, a motel sponsor, and that was kind of their color. And we did a little show there, and they sponsored the truck. So it was right in the middle of putting a new body on it. So I said, well, let's just go ahead and we'll paint it turquoise. We'll put their name and everything on it for that show, and we'll run it like that. And then we took all the letters back off it after we was done. And that was about the time that we was doing the Jack Specific and the Road Champs toys. It got put on the side, and then the flames got put on the side, and then, you know, then it got put back to being yellow, which I don't know. I kind of I favor the yellow trucks, you know, always have. It's just, I just kind of like a yellow truck for some reason. And so when we did the Mattel thing, they with the Cyborg truck, actually, they're the ones that came up. They give us renditions of like six different colors, and we ended up, that's when we ended up with the green body. It was just something completely different on that truck. And then the Tough Enough truck, that's when it went with the Road Champs. And it was kind of a different style altogether. You know, the truck was supposed to be beefy and coming apart, you know, and rough and tough, that kind of thing. So it had a lot of diamond plate stuff on it that changed the look of it. But, you know, sponsors really do a lot of what they want on them. We had the Bars League and the Resilone sponsor for years. They, you know, they supplied all the vinyl and everything. We did a little kick ourselves on that stuff too. And, you know, like what we had on the hood there for a while, and one with the crazy guy driving the truck, sticking out of the hood, you know, cartoon character with the big shifter in his hand and that kind of stuff. So, you know, you get to get your creative juices going when you're doing these things, because it's not a cut and dry thing, you know, unless they're really, you know, said, no, this is the way it's going to be, or it's not going to work. But we've been lucky enough to have sponsors that work with us on design.
Yeah, and definitely one of the major ones you've had over the years was Resilone and Bars Leagues. How'd you get a hold of them? Because they were part of your team for so many years.
You know, we used to go to the SEMA show every year and hunt down sponsors to help us out on the program, you know, product sponsors. I was waiting to talk to a guy that I had a sponsor of the year with, and I just wanted to check in with him. And I was actually standing by the Bars League booth, and I started talking to them, and they go, hey, you know, what's it take to get, you know, our name on your truck? I said, well, first thing you got to do is just let's talk about it. So we kicked up a thing that day. We spent, you know, about 30 minutes with them, and we left there with a sponsorship in hand. You know, it wasn't a very big sponsorship at first because they didn't want to put out a bunch of money or anything, you know, back then. I mean, God, we had them forever. And it just grew from there. And when we went, the Resilone came out, Bars League got Resilone. And they found out we were doing shows in Mexico. So they decided, hey, we want to do this Resilone truck, and we want to go crazy with it. And because if you're going to Mexico, we want to push the thing. We want to do a lot of displays down there. They kept me very busy down there between shows doing displays and everything. And it was a win-win for them. It was a win for us. We had a great time with them. There's a great company that we got tied into, and I miss them very much. But the economy, you know, when the economy goes down, sponsorships go down.
Go down indeed. A lot of opportunity to keep growing. And I know, just looking back at those paint schemes, you see the complete growth from point A to point B. And another good question came in from Gabriel Lee asking, any chance you would do a throwback scheme or body to maybe one of those past liveries?
Well, you know, talked about that, you know, we're putting the beast back together. You know, I've got the frame done, the body's sitting on it. You know, it's just a little bit at a time. We're not going to get crazy and pour a bunch of money at one time on this thing, because we still got to make a living. We still got to go out and do shows. It keeps me busy. You know, so when I do have extra time, we work on that. So the beast is coming back as, you know, original monster truck as it was at that time. Cyborg will be next. And, you know, it's all about, do we use the red Dodge body that's sitting in the corner where they had the lights and everything on it, or do we use the green Cyborg? You know, that's the biggest question about that is. But, yeah, you know, the throwback thing about the colors and the schemes and everything, that's always cool to see, you know. So, you know, do we go back, you know, back in time on Tough Enough? I don't know. Maybe one of these days.
It'd be great to see. Another question came in here from Zachary Newton. It's a long one, but I'll paraphrase it here. He's asking about, what's the origin of the Thugger truck? What was the body supposed to resemble? That was just always a interesting truck.
The Thugger truck, that was just a thought process of we got to have something out there different, you know, and I just wanted to make something different. And, you know, the really funny thing about that is it's like, what am I going to call this thing, you know? And I said, God, I want to make something different. So I made the tees. I made the front tees. Billy Haynes was driving it from Colorado at that time for me. And it was actually the frame of stuff was one of the old Tough Enough frames that I had that I replaced with the new one, you know, but I still had it sitting there. So we threw it back together and I just wanted to something different on it. And I have a real good friend that helps me a lot. And he's got this old cat that's called Thugger. And I don't know why. That's a, you know what? I'm just going to name the thing Thugger and we'll just see where it goes and have some fun with it. And, you know, put kids in the tees at the pit party. So they look like you'd be an eight by the truck. And I just recently sold that truck.
And Phil, I think it's time for the photo segment, isn't it?
Yes. But play the intro. You do that.
Uh-oh.
Don't say uh-oh just yet. We haven't brought up the first photo. But anyway, speaking about uh-oh, what is this thing?
Oh, you know what? That belonged to one of the clowns at the show, and he was doing a bunch of clown stuff, and I stole his four-wheeler. He did a lot of shows with Lone Star there in Texas, and he's a great guy. And he was doing stuff, so I ran up there, and I stole his four-wheeler, his clown car, and went buzzing around on it just to mess with him.
And who are these group of guys?
You know, good old Rod, you know, he's a very good friend of mine there in Tucson. He's been, you know, he started coming around with Mudboggin, you know, he had an American made truck and then he, you know, did the McGruff thing. He's a guy that I can call anytime and get his advice, you know, whatever smart act remark I can get from him. We have a lot of fun together. A lot of fun on other people's expenses. You know, he's a good jokester to be around. We just have a great time together. He is a very competitive monster truck driver with the McGruff truck. And we stay in touch a lot.
Yeah, and here's another group of guys.
Yeah, Caesar and Sammy from Tucson. Caesar from, you know, Mexico and stuff. That was probably in Mexico itself. And, you know, there's a long line of years between the two of me and Sammy there. Caesar's a great guy. He was driving Sammy's Corvette for quite a while. He's a super nice guy from Mexico. Actually built him a ride truck at one time. I built him a ride truck and shipped it down to Mexico. That had to be the first. That was Charlotte, North Carolina, the first time they ever had like 50 trucks at one event. That was a big time thing there. I ended up fifth in that show with all them trucks with the two-wheel drive truck, with Cyborg being a two-wheel drive truck. And it just had an injected motor at that time. That was that first Dodge body. That was Charlotte. It was a long, long week of racing. It was great. That's got to be Mike Welch. That has to be in Lubbock, Texas. He was announcing that weekend. And he's a good old friend. He's always doing something. You know, he's always building something. We've had a lot of years together. He's a hell of a guy to know. Now that's original beast. That's probably at the Apache Sportsman's Park. I used to have that race. That racetrack was a mud bog that me and my dad had. We started racing in the mud. We decided, well, we had this property out there that we leased and did mud bogs. And that's like 1984 or something like that. Maybe even sooner than that. You know, I mean, heck, I'm still skinny back then. Well, that is one of the Mexico shows. That time, I think I did a display at one of the breweries or something, and they had that up there on the billboard at the display I did for them down there in Mexico. Fun times. That's El Paso. That's a long, long time ago. That's one of my favorite shots. You know, Tom and Pablo, me and Tony and Todd and Nick Jackson. We were in El Paso, Texas. It was in the early 90s, somewhere around there. You can see the barefoot truck behind us that Todd was, Follick was driving, the thing that Tony's thing truck, you know, Pablo was there, you know, the Gravedigger truck, and Tom had his truck there. That was a great weekend that weekend. That was it's hard to, you know, get all them guys together like that.
Got two more photos for you.
That's one of them show shots. We were in, it was Arizona. We were in Sholo, Arizona, and Mike Phelps was there, and Clint Watson was there. Rod, of course, you know, he had a grandstand at, you know, Big Frank there, Mark Schrader. You know, we had a blast. I mean, it was a good weekend. We did two nights there in Sholo that year, and it's just another one of them gang shots that, you know, you get all these people together, you know, you never know if you're ever going to be able to have that shot again with the same people. Tucson, racetrack in Tucson, you know, went out there, hooked it. It went over, sliding down the dirt track. And it's funny because, you know, Rod and Frank, Big Frank, come over to help me get out and stuff. And they're still going, Jack, your truck's on, you're on fire, you're on fire. I go, no, my truck's on fire. I'm not on fire. So finally I got unbuckled. You know, usually I'm kind of known for just staying in the truck. Just turn me back over because I'm not done yet, you know. But there was alcohol leaking out on the header and stuff. And they caught a little fire. The fire department was sitting up there in the corner watching it, you know, sit there and burn. So it's like, you know what? Somebody call 911, see if we can get a fire truck down here to put it out. But it was kind of funny because they kept going, you're on fire, you're on fire. And I'm going, no, my truck's on fire. I'm not on fire. That was another one of those crazy weekends.
I remember that very well. There's all Frank in the comments, helping my hero out of his truck.
Yeah. Frank's. You know, the guy is a great guy. He's a real good friend. I'm very honored to know Frank. He is the devoted monster truck mud bog fan. You know, he's got the white little mud bogger. He lives it, dreams it. He's been watching me run since he's been a little 10-year-old kid, where his dad used to bring him to Phoenix Stadium to watch mud bogs. You know, he's been there. I didn't know him back then, but he was there. He was there. He tells me about all these shows, and it's like, yep, you were there. He's lived it.
So a lot of those guys we showed in the pictures, I know you've had a lot of great memories and tales with them. So I have to do the obligatory ask, because those guys have also been on the podcast. You have any good stories with Sam Sturgis on the road?
You know, Sammy, he's a great guy. You know, there's all kinds of stories about Sam. You know, he just goes out and does his show. He does his thing. He's had his good moments. He's had his bad moments. Sometimes he likes me. Sometimes he don't. You know, he's got mad at me. He's got mad at me and Rod at times for goofing off and this and that. But, you know, all in all, he's a good racer. He's been there. You know, I guess he's just doing his jet truck stuff now. I think he's finally pretty well got out of the driver's seat of his own truck. But, you know, he's been out there for a lot of years, got a lot of time together. He used to actually come out to my mud bog track when he was mud bogging a rail. He'd come out there and race for me.
Yeah, and another one of those guys we showed was Rod Wood. Man, it's definitely a long time coming. You have a favorite Rod Wood story?
Yeah. One of the favorite stories of Rod Wood was, we was in Mexico doing a show way down south. and had his truck out front on display. And we were coming out to the venue to get something to eat or something. And these people were in his truck. And so he stopped and said, get out of the truck. And all you can see is his little legs, wobbling inside his truck. And this little kid, he must have been 300 pounds. And he had slid underneath the seat and the steering wheel, and he was stuck. So it was so funny because Rod had to get up there and help him get this little kid unstuck out of his truck. It's like only you could have a little kid stuck in his truck that's just as short as you and round as you.
Only Rod would. And I know a lot of those events you did with done Rod was down in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. We did a lot of events. We had a lot of fun together. They used to do a cat and dog chase with cars before the show and stuff. We were in Mexico City. So, you get me and Rod together, it's like, how are we going to make this better? And we built these cars. We put cloth ears on them and made cat ears and dog ears and stuff. And then what he would do after it was all over with, he'd go out there and just run them over before the show with the McGruff truck. But we got thinking, what would be better if we poured gas on the tails right before they'd take off? We'd light them. That way these cars would be on fire running around Mexico, on this racetrack on fire. And it was hilarious, because nobody knew anything about it. It was just one of those things that you too much time on your hands, you think of things to do. And of course it was me and Rod, the jokesters, the fun guys, just going out there and have some fun and make it more interesting.
As we have another question from Frank, and Frank says, tell them about getting pulled over by the VW bug.
We were coming back from a show, going to a show in Mexico. We were going through these little towns, there's a lot of small roads, a lot of small towns and stuff. And somebody, I don't know who it was, but somebody had clipped a mirror or something on somebody's truck. So all of a sudden, here comes these sirens and stuff, pulls us all over, and it's a Mexican cop and a VW bug with sirens and stuff, pulling all these big monster truck stuff over. So it's kind of funny, You think getting pulled over by a Volkswagen bug for clipping a fender or a mirror, But it's one of those things in Mexico, you got to play their game. They pull you over, they stop you, they shake you down, you give them the 50 pesos or whatever to pay for the thing. And it's like, they just want to get a fine right there to pay for the fine and go on.
Another one of those guys we showed on the pictures was another Hall of Famer, Mike Welch. So many years of history with Mike. Do you have a good Mike Welch story?
Well, basically, Mike, I did a lot of work with Mike. I used to go up there and stay at his house. We worked on vehicles. Like I said, we worked on the tank together, a little tank that we built. Because of him, I went to Japan. He got me in there. They needed another truck for some reason, and it got me in there as a standby truck in case somebody couldn't make it. And they, because of Mike, I went to Japan and did that show and ended up winning that show in Tokyo Dome. But, Mike's he's just a character of his own. He's a hard worker. I can't really think of, he's a pretty serious guy, really, about everything. As far as a jokester, it's just not quite there with Mike. We had a lot of fun, a lot of jokes back and forth and stuff, but, he's just a all-around good guy. He's always into something. He's always building something. You see it on the websites and stuff that, nonstop videos with Mike of what he's building. The guy never slows down.
He's always tinkering, and that's always makes him a Hall of Famer. I got another question just came in from one of your former drivers, teammates here, Mike Dufresne. He says, tell him about driving you around town with the sticker that says, my other truck is a monster truck. You remember that story?
Oh, God. I really can't remember exactly. God, there's been so many things. We pretty well lived together for a year in a motorhome and stuff. We run all over New Orleans when I did a show down there. I'd go down there and we'd work on the trucks and stuff. I got to throw a blank on that one. I mean, he'd have to say some more about it. But, I know what he's talking about. I know exactly what he's talking about. He stayed at my – he used to live at my shop, too, and when I lived in Texas. Had a little house there that he stayed in. And our runaround car was a little red Yugo. And it was so funny because, you think of a Yugo and a monster truck driver and a Yugo, but it's really funny because I still own that Yugo. They were a throwaway car. If you bought a new Ford car, they'd give you a Yugo to go with it. But that thing was one of the most dependable cars. I'd probably go out there and start it today and drive it around the block and not think nothing of it. But that's what he's talking about. I had to catch up with what he's talking about. That here would be me and him and my big blonde Labrador dog in the back of the Yugo running around town doing stuff and going after parts.
Always traveling on the road. I love that. On one of your gray body trucks, you ran a decal that said "Old Age and Treachery." How would you want to put that on your truck?
Oh, that's Rocky. She come up with that. And it was just kind of another one of those little things to do. It's like what we got now is you don't know Jack, but it was just one of those things to do to be different and just create conversation. People loved it, and it was so funny because all the older guys at the show got it. That old age will do over young age any day in treachery. They get all the old guys know how to get around it and get it done a lot easier and faster and trickier. And it worked out to be a great little gimmick thing there for a while. We had a lot of fun with it. And, once in a while it pops back up.
Always where it matters most. And I know a lot of it too with time goes on. Oh, actually, a comment just came in from Rocky. Yeah, it's a line out of a Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings song.
Yeah, that's where it came from. Like, she's kind of, I guess it kind of just fit me or something. It's like old Adrian Treachery will win every time. It's just the way it works. We've already been there. We've already done it. Don't even try it. We've done it. It's not used.
So since Rocky's in the comments here, how did you and Rocky meet?
Actually, Rocky used to work for the National Mud Bog Association. She started selling tickets for mud bogs there in Phoenix when she lived in Phoenix, and that's how we met, through the mud bog. She was there every weekend working the ticket booth, the back ticket booth, during payout. We just became real good friends. She was out there when we were running around promoting the shows, putting out flyers, We used to run around towns and for 2 weeks and do nothing but hang flyers on every window that we could find. And we just kind of became real good friends at that time. And it just ended up that we got married.
And how important is it to have someone so supportive of your lifestyle after all these years?
It makes a difference of doing it and not doing it. If your other half is not happy with what you're doing, you're not gonna go anywhere. You're gonna fight about it. You're gonna have problems. We've always talked things out, and she loves going on the road. She loves doing things with people. She loves meeting people. She takes pictures of everything. That's one of her big passions. Of taking her pictures. She's probably got more pictures archived of like those group shots with all the drivers and stuff. She tries to get a group shot with all the drivers at every single show that we do that you will never be able to duplicate. And she has just been a great partner in this business. She's, she's right there next to me all the time. I couldn't love her any better.
And, you've been in the business for so long now, and you've seen just incredible evolution of the sport. Did you ever think when you got involved way back then, you go back to where we're at now, that this is where monster trucks would be doing the things that they're doing?
I never thought that they were going to do what they did, that they're doing now. You got the stuff on television. You got, it's Disney on ice. I'm not a stoppy guy. I'm not a backflip guy. you know, people love that kind of stuff. They go out there and they do it. They destroy their trucks. You know, the television stuff, it's all television stuff. You know, that's great for them. Who would have ever dreamed, you know, that you're going to fly over an airplane, you know, with a monster truck? You know, what are they going to jump over next? A super tanker? You know, I mean, where's it going to stop? Where's it going to go? You just wonder every year on what's next, because it's just amazing what these younger guys are doing in the seat of these trucks. And, you know, you got to be proud of them, you know, to go out there and do these kind of things. You know, we're out there with these bad suspensions, you know, with 10 inches of travel in our trucks, no ramps, no nothing, iron wall in these cars, beating ourselves up, you know. Back in the day when this all started, there was no such thing. You know, you started 20 foot, 30 foot back, and you put it to the floor, and when you hit, you hit. And hang on, because where you're going to land, who knows where you're going to land. And now that suspensions and stuff that we've developed over the years and the monster truck stuff, you know, it has changed the whole dynamic of what's next.
And that's a good point, because, you know, our friend Josh Rose brought up again there how Cyborg was a fully independent suspension truck. That's crazy evolution. That's something that you did so many years ago that really nobody's touched since. You know, what was that process?
Well, it was a, you know, I was actually looking at little RC cars, you know, gas RC cars and stuff, thinking, you know, if you could just make one of those things work, a monster truck work right like that. And it took a long time. You know, I forgot how to drive with that truck because I was looking through the floorboards at the front end, watching things break, watching things fall off, watching this break, watch this bend. And I got to where it was, I had to really think about what I was doing, because I'd hit the cars and I'd look down and see what was going to happen next before I finally figured out how to fix this thing so it didn't break. I actually was in Wichita Falls, Texas, and I took a real bad hit and I couldn't even walk. I just knocked my back completely out with this truck. I came home. I was sitting there in a chair in front of it with a cutting torch, and I was fixing to cut the whole thing out. I thought, this is crazy. What was I thinking? It's going to kill me. And then a light bulb or something went off, and I'm going, well, no wonder it don't work. You know, I just had a whole different thought about looking at it. And, you know, from what I learned from trying to keep it together, and that was the end of the breakage. I mean, it literally, I'd break a tie rod like any monster truck in the front. It would flop around. I'd go out there. They'd shut me off two or three times because the front end was broke. It's like, I know it's broke, but it's not stopping it, you know. But it just, it's one of those things, you know, that I just knew it would work. I didn't have nothing to go off of. I just kind of stuck it in my head and thought, you know, if I make this move and that move, put this together, something was going to happen. And it did. It was a great thing. And it's still a great truck. You know, I really missed driving it. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but I did have a lot of fun in that truck.
Absolutely. And another great comment just came in from Mike Dufresne. Yeah. Says, you talk about the first self-centered rear steer that you're still running after all these years.
Yeah. You know, at the first go of all this stuff, when monster trucks going, self-setting was not even thought about. And when I first started doing the monster truck tire truck, I had a straight rear end underneath it, and you just couldn't get around the corners. So I went and got a front end put underneath it, and I found out I couldn't steer. I mean, I could not. If you go around the corner, you'd bring it back and I'd oversteer it every time. It just got to be just a pain. It just irritating. I said, there's got to be an easier way to do this to make life easier, because you got too many things to do, too many things to look at while you're going around the corner, where you're going to go, where you're going to be. If you're sitting on two tires, what think about bringing the steering back? So I sat down and just started figuring it out, and I built the first self-centering steering. And the funny thing about it is that plate today is sitting on Tough Enough. It's still the exact same first plate I ever built for the self-centering steering. And there's been a lot of different variations since then, but, you know, it was the very first self-centering steering.
And I got to ask, you know, what advice do you have for someone wanting to get their foot in the door in the monster truck industry?
You know, it's a money game. You know, the biggest thing is that I've never done is you know, you can get a truck. That's not just the first thing. Then you got to have something to haul it with. Then you got to have the spare parts. Well, if you got a job, you know, your job's going to suffer because you're not going to be ready to go to your job 5 days a week because you're going to be traveling. You're going to be doing this. You're going to be doing that. It's a very hard decision to make. You got to be able to afford to do it. And the biggest thing you got to do is not take money from your home. You know, I've seen so many people go out there and get a monster truck, buy all this kind of stuff, lose their job, get a divorce, lose their house, you know, and it's like, well, what good did that do you? You know, you've completely changed your life over a piece of metal. I mean, is it worth it? I don't know. I mean, the advice is get on a team, work for them, find out if it's you or not, because you're either a monster truck driver or you're not, you know. And if you, the hours that you have to put in to do this kind of thing, you don't even think about it. You know, the late nights, the all night long, trying to put it back together. You're done with this show. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Autographs is over. Your truck's laying there in pieces. You work all night long on it. By noon next day, you're trying to get it cleaned up enough and make sure everything's back on it so you can do a show in 2 hours. So you got to really think hard and think serious, and you need the backing behind you to do this. It's not a poor man's sport. It's not go out and just run around a track and go home, park the car or something and say, okay, that's great. You know, it takes a lot to do this. It's not easy to get into. Best advice is find a team that looking for a worker, work your way up and decide if you're going to do this or not. Don't spend every penny that you ever had in your life to do this. I always got the kind of rolling joke I've always had. It's like, save all your money up. When you finally get enough money to buy a monster truck, save a dollar, go to the dollar store, buy a bag of marbles, put your tires on your truck, put the marbles in your mouth, go out there, and every time you hit a car, spit out a marble. When you lose all your marbles, you're a monster truck driver.
That is some great advice, that's for sure. That's definitely something. But I got to ask, you know, what was your reaction getting inducted into the Hall of Fame? And, you know, what was your Hall of Fame experience like?
You know what? I wish I could be there this weekend. You know, that is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to this sport is, you know, the Hall of Fame, the Monster Truck Museum, the whole deal. You know, I got nominated, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 times. I thought, God, is this ever going to happen? Is it ever going to happen? And a lot of people, you know, get irritated and stuff because they think, you know, this guy should be in there and this guy should be in there. It's not fair. Well, you know, if you put everybody that's ever done something for this sport in at first, what are you going to do then? You know, you got to have guys that contribute to the sport. You got to have guys that hung into the sport, and you got to have guys that has done something. You know, it doesn't mean that they've had to completely rebuild the monster truck world to be in there, but they've had to put their time in. And it was a very special and a humbling thing to finally get there. And, you know, I had my thoughts about it. It's like, oh, this ain't never going to happen. I'm getting tired of this. Then it happened. We jumped in. We flew there, showed up. And it's like the whole world changed. You know, it's like, this is the greatest thing. You know, it's so great to be thought of things that you've done all of your life to get to this point and to be honored to be part of this growing club of being a monster truck driver that people think that you've done enough and you're good enough to be where you're at today.
So, you know, I got to ask, you know, being inducted in the Hall of Fame is probably a big highlight in your career. But, you know, out of everything, what is your favorite moment in the monster truck industry?
You know, besides that, you know, doing shows, like being invited to go do a show in Japan, that was, at that point, was the greatest thing in the world. You know, to leave the United States to go over there, to go to Hawaii and do a show, you know, things like that. You know, it's hard to compare what the greatest moment is, you know, because you're always looking for a better moment. You know, what happens, where am I going to go next week, or what am I going to go next month, or what's going to happen? It could be the greatest moment. You know, it's always, you know, looking on the bright side of things. I really can't, you know, put out, you know, one of the greatest moments was being able to race my truck with my son Sterling, or race my truck against my older brother Rick. You know, I mean, those are things that I'll never forget. You know, back in the day, having my dad next to me working, you know, late night on my truck, you know, that's one of the greatest moments of my life. You know, I'd do anything to have that back. So, you know, I mean, I've never really thought about the greatest moments on this career, about the fame and fortune of it. It's what I do. It's what I love. And that's kind of the way I've always thought about it.
So, you know, what does the future look like for Jack Caberna and Monster Trucks?
Yeah, you know, people ask me that a lot. My wife asked me that. I ain't ready to quit yet. I still love the racing part. I still love the shows. I'm getting kind of tired of driving up and down the road. You know, I joke around. It's like, you know what? Is it time to get rid of the truck and build something that I don't have to put tires on? And go out there and be Sideshow Jack, you know, put some big floppy feet on or something and go out there at halftime, you know, at these monster truck shows, still be part of it, but not have to kill myself working on something and do a sideshow, do a side act. You know, we've done different things. You know, we had the motorcycle demolition derby for a couple of years that I ran and built all the bikes for. You know, that was something that we did years back, that we had, you know, 8 bikes out there crashing into each other. You know, that was a great sideshow. It was a lot of work, but it, you know, you just threw them back in the trailer when you got done. So maybe that's the future, back to doing something like that.
Yeah, it's great to see a lot more people coming in the comments here as we're wrapping up here. I see Corey Clark just jumped in. He says he met Jack in 1997 at the Tucson Rodeo Grounds. It was just Jack, Gravedigger, and he was driving Bounty Hunters. So, always good to see Corey in the comments here.
A long time ago. That was, you know, you just, God, 1997. Where'd the time go, you know? And yeah, you know, it's been a long time since, you know, being at the Rodeo Grounds and stuff, and having the Gravedigger there, the Bounty Hunter there, and then, you know, at the Cyborg there at that time. But yeah, that's a long time ago, you know. You forget about the people that's been at these shows, because it just goes on and on and on and on, and you just don't know who's next or who you're going to meet, who you're going to see again. Because sometimes you see one person, but you don't ever see him for another 5 years.
And
one of your biggest fans are in the comments right now. There he is, Rod Wood. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid watching Jack on TV.
Yeah, that's funny, because we always joke about that, you know. We're talking, you know, on an interview or something like that, you know, and it's like, yeah, I can remember, you know, watching Rod Wood when I was growing up, sitting watching cartoons, and he'd come on with a commercial saying McGruff is going to be there. You know, I'd be sitting there in my pajamas watching cartoons. But, yeah, you know, that's Rod's funny guy. You know, it's always that comment about this and that. We have a great time together. You know, we kick it back and forth to each other. You know, we have a lot of fun, and him and Karen and me and Rocky, we go out. We have a lot of fun together. We enjoy each other's company. He's a guy that I hope that's going to be around for a long time, to have a friend like him.
Yeah, and you've traveled a lot of places too. And see, another comment came in from Josh Rhodes. It says, speaking of Japan, what was the culture like over there? How was the crowd?
You know, it was really funny because we were, you know, it was, we were walking around there, you know, with Mike Welch and his brother Travis and Lurch from Bigfoot and stuff. And everybody kept pointing at us going, wrestlers, wrestlers. They all thought we were the wrestlers who were in town doing a wrestling match or something. And it was really different over there because, like at the show, you do something and they just sat there because it was not polite to yell and scream and clap till the complete show was completely done. So you didn't even know if you were doing something good or you're doing something bad. You know, what is wrong with these people? Nobody's saying nothing. You're just watching this show. You know, it was really hard to do this and to communicate with them. But it was so funny because we've traveled going around town looking at stuff. And everybody's always, you know, you're 6 foot tall guys and all these other people, they're just pointing at us. You know, most of them all kept saying wrestlers, wrestlers. So it was cool.
Yeah, I don't Phil, know. You can't stop laughing about Rob.
No, wait.
Phil, of course.
No, it's good. It's all good. Hey, listen, we're having a lot of fun here. But I know another place you traveled to was Hawaii. You were over there not too long ago as well. You know, what was it like being out in Hawaii?
You know, we had a blast in Hawaii. We went over there to do the fair over there. And we ended up doing like 3 weekends in a row during the fair, during the week, all week and stuff. And was with Craig Christensen. And he had his ride truck there. I had my truck there. And then we had Rick Swanson come in and he was there with his truck. And we just had a blast. You know, it was so cool to go over there and just kind of hang out. It was a lot of work because every day we had to be at the venue for the show. And we just go out there like 3 times during the evening and jump cars and do wheelies and that kind of stuff. But it was a great time over there. You know, we completely enjoyed it. Can't wait to go back over there. We just, it was so relaxing to be able to sit there and just watch the ocean during the mornings and stuff, drink coffee and just enjoy ourselves. It was just one of those memories that you'll never forget. Can't wait to go back over there and do some more shows over there. Hopefully pretty soon back over there again to do something, you know, but yeah, or just go over there for vacation, whatever that is. I haven't had a vacation in 40 years, but you know, you're on the road every day. I guess that's my vacation. I'm somewhere every weekend.
Got a call back here. Gary Schott just asked, tell a story. I remember Imperial Fairgrounds in 1984. I think you rolled out a display on tractor tires.
Yep, that was there in Yuma. We were doing a camera shoot with the TV station that day, and the guy was in the Beast with me. And it was really, I had a truck called a little like an Odyssey. That was a baby Beast, and Charlie Crosby was in that. He was flying around and he rolled it. It's like, oh my God, it's just what I needed. So I was distracted, and this guy, the camera guy, was going, nail it, nail it. And I I was kind of distracted, you know, kind of irritated at Charlie for messing up my little baby Beast truck. And I nailed it with the tall, skinny tractor tires on it, and it hit a soft spot in that they must have just filled in a bunch of stuff with sand. And it dug into the front tire real hard when I nailed it and went sideways, flipped upside down. Of course, you know, seat belts wasn't on. Ended up landing on top of the camera guy, smashed the camera, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I think the guy even hurt his hand, you know, between trying to hang on or something. But it was so funny because they showed the footage on television, you know, on the shot for the show and stuff, but they had the sound off for some strange reason. They couldn't put the sound on for the language, I guess. But it's one of those things that you don't ever expect that's going to happen. And it was a lesson learned not to take anything for granted, that things will happen. And, you know, Gary, you know, he was there. He's always, you know, sometime or point, Gary's always there. You know, always the shows we used to do with Gary. You know, still do shows with Gary. Terry Woodcock's another one that he's a great guy that we always enjoy. Terry Woodcock, we were up in Portland, Oregon, working on Unnamed and Untamed, rebuilding that truck. And the guy we were working for, Mike West at that time, that owned those trucks, he literally got 25 hours out of us in one day's work. because the time changed that day and he moved the clock back on us. So we worked 25 hours that day, nonstop, trying to get that truck done. So it's always been a great story about with Terry, you know, that we put 25 hours in a 24-hour day.
Always making it work. Now, Jack, I know on your fire suit, you have this patch that says, like, what does it say? Like 12th annual retirement tour.
It says 8th annual retirement tour, but it's about 4 years old.
Yeah. It's you keep putting off that retirement tour, but yeah, I know. Well,
I mean, what are you going to do when you retire? You know, I don't know.
I know. And this has been your life for so long and so many great memories, and you're not slowing down. We always say that a lot. I know you have no plans of slowing down, but when it is all said and done, Jack, what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I'm hoping that the stuff that I developed for these trucks in the early years, between the self-centering, being the first tubular frame monster truck, skinned only truck, center seat truck, 4-inch suspension, number of different things. You know, I mean, I've had people, you know, like, you know, Dave Reith. And, you know, they used to talk about, you know, they'd sit there and point out trucks and find out what on their trucks, you know, that what did Jack have to do with that or this and that, you know. Hopefully, you know, that things like that will always be remembered, you know. And, you know, my thoughts are out for Dave Reith. He got hurt the other day. He fell on his phone and broke his hip, or he fell on the hip and broke his phone. I don't know if he broke which first, the hip or the phone, but hopefully he's feeling better. I just need to do a shout out for him and hope things are going good for him. It's one of those things that you never know what's going to happen. But as far as, you know, when I quit doing this, hopefully people remember me.
And they forever will, Jack. You are a Hall of Famer. You've done it all in the business and you're not done yet. And your story will be forever immortalized here on the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's cool. I'm glad you guys got me on here. You know, you quit hurting my feelings and bypassing me. So, you know, I got such an easy feeling going on there. You know, I have that warm, fuzzy feeling now for you guys that you put me on your great show that you're doing. I really appreciate it. You know, this is a great thing. Really appreciate what you guys are doing for the sport. Always enjoy seeing you at shows. You know, it's always a fun thing, no matter if we're cooking food in the back of a trailer or whatever we're doing to between rounds, between shows, the day before stuff. Really, thank you guys very much for putting me on this. It means a lot to me, and you guys are doing a great thing. Thank you so much.
We mean a lot to us, Jack. We really appreciate it.
Cool.
Definitely. It was an awesome time hearing your story. And Phil, what you got for us?
We got it going on there. Jack, thank you so much again for being with us here tonight. We'll hope to see you very soon.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Vincent, come back on screen here, Vince. All right, there you are. All right, yeah. So, yeah, Jack will burn the guy. Self-explanatory. He says I've been putting him off. Well, have to build it up to a big moment. You just can't have Jack O'Byrne on any other day of the week.
It's about time.
Yeah, you know, it's a big deal.
It's only a matter of time.
I do have to give a shout out, obviously, to, you know, Mr. Frank Ramirez. He says, I told him he did. Yeah, we saw Frank a couple weeks ago. He says, how come Jack hasn't been on yet? It's like, we're building it up. And also shout out to Rocky. He's been super helpful getting this all put together. You know, they're a great team. So then I think that just proves it right there with the amount of memories that Jack has created and he's going to continue to create as time goes on.
Definitely looking forward to seeing Jack in the future and seeing what's next on the Monster Truck scene.
Absolutely. Hey, if you guys enjoyed tonight's podcast, once again, make sure you like and share this video. Share it all across social media. I know it's a big weekend. The International Monster Truck Museum and Hall of Fame is opening up their permanent home this weekend in Butler, Indiana. So you're going to want to support them and share this story across. You know, Jack's a proud Hall of Famer and definitely want a lot of people maybe didn't get to go to the Hall of Fame that year or want to catch up on some of Jack's timeline. Come back and check out this episode. So make sure you share it across social media. Like this video and like our Facebook page as well. And follow us on Instagram. A lot of the people that Jack has ran with over the years and a lot of people in those pictures, like Gary Schott and Rod Wood and Mike Welch. They've all been on the podcast. You can check out their episodes in our video archives here on our Facebook page. Check out the video tab or the live tab, live podcast episodes, to see our entire library from the Hall of Famers to the Rising Stars. Also, audio only, wherever you can download podcasts on the go, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, Audible, Stitcher, just Anchor, so many. Wherever you can find the sound, you can find our podcast. So whether you're in the car, on the plane, in the gym, at work, wherever, you can download our podcast audio only.
I thought this was scripted.
It's never scripted. We're just really – we've done a lot of these, folks.
It's got it written on his arm.
We'll have some news coming out here in the next coming days and weeks. Always thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast here. Without the support, can't keep what we're doing. Always have a lot of fun telling stories and always evolving and changing what we do and present how we should feel that everybody in the sport should be presented as. It seems kind of wordy, but, you know, we like to set a standard for ourselves. And,
it's about the guests.
That's how we about see the it. Guests. That's very much important. So stay tuned for some news coming out here in the next few days and weeks. And hopefully we'll see you guys very soon.
Yeah, for now, see you later.